We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, Shibuya K, I interview my wonderful colleague at KXLU, Alexa Terry, about this genre of music you probably haven't heard about. And then we play some selections. She can be heard every Monday on KXLU at 10:30 a.m. Her show is called Feral FM. Stay tuned! We are recording. It's June 12th, 2023. Mystic Pete here with Alexa.
Yeah.
You have a show on KXLU,
yeah.
This cool little station
yeah.
out of Loyola Marymount University mm-hmm. called, your show is called Feral FM.
Yes.
And I was listening, I often listen. I was listening a week or two ago, and you put on some, I guess, J-pop, but a
yeah.
specific.
Yeah.
genre
yeah.
of J-pop.
Yes.
And I was just blown away. I was going, if I can just live inside this musical
yeah.
genre, if I can like jump yeah. into it,
yes,
then I will be a happy person. But unfortunately, no matter how much I smash my head into
yeah.
the radio, I can't go in.
No.
Hi, Alexa.
Hi.
Well, why don't you say a word about yourself, and then
yeah.
you'll educate our audience about this very cool little slice of music.
Yeah. I mean, as Pete said, my name is Alexa, but I have a radio show on KXLU called Feral FM, and with that, I DJ mostly a whole variety of, like, electronic music, from, like, high-energy stuff to more, like, chill and somewhat somber, but I try to keep it overall fairly positive. But, you know, like, electronic music is very all over the place and like what it can achieve. But every now and then I'll do kind of special broadcasts and shows here and there, because, you know, I listen to more than just electronic music. While that's kind of the focus of my show, every now and then I'll kind of nod back to genres I focused on when my show was you know, getting its start. Like, sonically, it's been all over the place, like, in the grand timeline, the grand scheme of things. I started as Buttertunes. That was my old KXLU name, and I used that from, like November of 2018, and I think around last July, actually, I decided to change the name to Feral FM, and that was because I'm also an artist and illustrator, and I screen print, like, on paper, on shirts, and now I'm doing some kind of patchwork designs on pants that I sell online, but then I'm also, as of July, going to be selling at local, like, art markets. My brand with that is called Feral Moments, so Feral FM is a little bit of a play on words. You know, there's the feral part, but then FM for the radio, but also it's an abbreviation for Feral Moments, which is like my artistic brand. So I wanted to like cross the two paths together. And, you know, this is the sonic expression, whereas Feral Moments is the visual expression. So I kind of wanted it to be a harmonious thing. But anyways, back to my point.
It all fits together.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Got it.
And, you know, when I first was doing my show, I played, like, a lot of, like, Japanese city pop from, like, the 80s and the 90s. And then with that, like, through like getting into Japanese music more and researching, I discovered Japanese Shibuya Kei, which started in like the late 80s and the early 90s, but like really it saw its like prime in the late 90s and the early 2000s.
Can you spell it?
Yeah, Shibuya. So it's S-H-I-B-U-Y-A and then K-E-I. So it's like Shibuya-K, so Shibuya style, that's what it means. And Shibuya is a neighborhood in Tokyo, and it neighbors Harajuku, which is a neighborhood that's like very well known for its street style and kind of boutique shops. Like, you know, Japanese style has become like a huge like pop culture thing, especially lately online amongst like the youth. Youth fashion, I don't know what to call it, because I don't think that young, you know, the youth just have to dress like that, but, yeah, so, the creation of Shibuya Kei came from this idea, well, it's got, like, lots of sonic influences, but, like, mostly, you know, like, Japanese, traditional Japanese pop, rock, like indie music, some electronic elements, and bossa nova. And it was kind of this cultural movement or sonic cultural movement of like parodying the like elevator music you'd hear in like the department stores of Shibuya. And yeah, that's kind of where it came from. And yeah.
It's maybe similar to Psy's big hit Gangnam Style. You know, that's a district in Korea.
Yes.
That's similarly kind of pop, yeah, it's upscale.
Like, yeah, I would say, yeah, it's definitely like Gangnam Style is parodying like the bouginess of the neighborhood Gangnam, and like I think it's in Seoul. I would say the Tokyo equivalent to Gangnam is Roppongi, and then those are all kind of like the Beverly Hills of their respective cities. But yeah, it's kind of like a parody of like Shibuya Kei is like a parody, but also like appreciation. It's like not in like a mocking way, but more of just kind of taking these kitschy elements and like making something fun out of it, you know? So I guess in the end, yeah, similar, but like not in a grotesque, like not in this like extreme way. Like, oh, look at how bougie, because it's more like playful and like innocent, I would say.
It is.
Yeah.
It's where I want to live, yeah, in my mind. And yeah, I've been just looping, you gave me your show, I've been, yeah, looping it over and over. And oh then I did gosh. My own. There's just whole playlists, yeah, of this stuff. There's, yeah, a lot of material.
Yeah.
The only one I knew about and the only real hit in the United States was from Chiba Matto.
Yes, yes.
In the 90s.
Yes.
I was really into them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was just maybe the pinnacle of,
yeah,
this whole movement.
Exactly. Yeah, it was like, yeah, it's funny because I don't think I was like old enough to really know, like, because I feel like they were probably like at their most popular in like the 90s, yeah, like early 2000s, which I wasn't really aware of that music at that time. But like, yeah, it is funny to think that it's like you guys probably heard it and were like, oh, like this is so interesting.
Just then, one, yeah, you know, one tune or two that, mm-hmm, were hits. Mm-hmm. I think I saw them live.
Wow.
And who are these cool little, just didn't understand what was,
yeah,
happening until,
yeah,
now 2023.
Yeah, it's like a whole gimmicky thing, and I think there's like a resurgence in like appreciation of the music. I mean, it's still Shibuya Kei still exists, but it's kind of like it's changed. I would say like the influences these days are a bit more like electronic, actually. Like, there's a very popular J-pop artist called Kiari Pamyu Pamyu. And one of her producers, song producers, was part of, I think they're actually still active, but part of this like Shibuya Kei electronic duo called Capsule. And a lot of their early stuff taps into heavily like that very bossa nova, like kind of department store kitschy vibe. And like their stuff now is much more like pop influenced, but it's like, you know, it's still this like kind of happy energy. I feel like that's still very present in the Shibuya Kei today, but it's like interesting to see like how it's kind of like moved. I think it's less of like a standout. I think it's just blended into other stuff these days, or it's like kind of made its way into J-pop, but like not idol J-pop, like idol music, more so just like, since a lot of their influences are like Western artists, I feel like it's more so like comparable to like Western, like indie pop and stuff like that. So,
yes, well, Japanese music, mm-hmm. On the one hand, there's such corny stuff,
yes,
that if you just listen to it, your mind will be destroyed and your soul will be sucked yeah. out of your body,
yeah.
leaving you a husk of an individual. So there's yeah. that end. But then there's other music out of Japan that's just brilliant. I'm yeah. just thinking right now, like, my favorite piece possibly of all time is from Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I mean, like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
It's just so
yeah.
deep, and so many things are crossing, and it just takes you to another place.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of that composer, but he's famous
yes.
for that piece. But if you've seen the movie, yeah. you know what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
And then there's just so many kind of things happening mm-hmm. out of Japan. Well, I guess this leads us to the obvious question. How are you such an expert on music from this country?
Yeah. So I actually started learning Japanese when I was in middle school. They offered a course, and, you know, the options were Japanese, Spanish, and French. And I don't know. I just was interested in the language. Like, it was something completely different from, like, everything else. Like, you know, the characters. And, like, it's not, like, a romantic language. So, I don't know. Just, like, I was just curious about it. And, like, I hadn't, like, it wasn't because of anime or anything like that. Like, I'd watch anime here and there. But it's, like, that's not my initial, like, how I got into it. I actually started watching, like, Japanese animation, like, after the fact. But yeah, I took a class in middle school and then took courses in high school and then up through college as well. And I just really liked the fashion and the culture, or like the pop culture mostly. And so just like being online and like looking at the fashion, fashion and music are oftentimes like tied together. And so, you know, I'd find outfits and posts and like specific themed blogs and like Tumblr and stuff like that. And then they'd like repost music that was kind of similar. And so what's funny is I didn't even realize I was listening to Shibuya K at that point, or like Japanese music. Well, I knew I was listening to like J-pop, but like Shibuya K specifically, I didn't know what it was back then, but I was listening to a lot of that. Like, I'd listened to playlists that incorporated a lot of Shibuya K. And then it wasn't until, like, a year ago that I just decided to, like, revisit a lot of the music I had been listening to. And I realized, oh my god, I'd heard of these artists before. I just didn't, like, realize what it was at the time. But yeah, just, like, getting into the music just through, like, the pop culture online. And, you know, eventually, you know, watching, like, certain Japanese animated shows and, like, their soundtracks would include interesting songs. And you'd go down these rabbit holes. And then, I've been a couple times, so just, like, I don't know, just, like, being around and, like, seeing the music that was played around, or, like, I'd met some friends at, like, a Japanese school and, like, seeing what they were listening to as well, and they weren't listening to a lot of Shibuya K, but I don't know, it all kind of just the recommendations, the algorithms and all that, that's just, like, the music that I ended up.
You found your way to it, and
yeah,
it just hits a note. And this interesting cultural polarities coming out of Japan. I guess every
yeah.
nation has this, but on the one hand, this kind of obsession with
yeah,
cute,
yes,
like being really cute mm-hmm. and childlike,
yeah,
and then also on the other hand, like this fierce Yakuza, samurai,
yeah.
death-worshipping thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot happening with this culture that's... I'm very drawn
yeah.
to it myself.
Yeah.
I've never been there, but
yeah.
watched a ton of anime, a ton
mm-hmm.
of classic Japanese
yeah.
film. I mean,
yeah.
get into classic, like, 50s Japanese black and white film. You want to go on a ride? It's deep.
Yeah. It's very interesting because I think the society and culture itself is what kind of breeds this creativity or these just like crazy ideas. Like a lot of traditional Japanese culture involves like conformity and kind of like following the rules and all that. Like, you know, the workplace is very strict. There's very like strict etiquette that you follow. You know, you have to wear a uniform to school, but then a certain uniform to work. You have to like say certain things to your boss. Like, it's very like there's a lot of formalities with that. Whereas obviously like American culture or like Western culture in general is typically much more individualist, which has its like good parts and bad parts. Obviously, like there is good in like a collective, but then also just like with like rigorous schoolwork and work in general, like it creates a lot of, you know, like stress, anxiety, and just like, you know, people needing a creative outlet or just an outlet to like express themselves. So with that, a lot of people in Japan get really into a hobby. Like when they're into a hobby, they're really into it because it's their like, you know, it's how they can express themselves outside of, you know, their typical 9-to-5 or
just to get a release.
Exactly.
A way to relax and lose yourself.
Exactly.
We all need that.
Exactly.
But so through hobbies or being a businessman on Harley Davidson's or like this kind of obsession, it in a very restricted, confined culture, you need that.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned something earlier, the idol culture.
Yeah.
I don't think most Americans know what that is. And maybe you can explain. I have this DJ show on Saturday nights in a dream, and I often invite a lot of people when it was live, and I had a idol performer come. I had no idea what this was.
Yeah.
And I interviewed her, and I was like kind of blown away, watched a few movies about it or documentaries, and that's just a surreal situation.
Yeah, please. Yeah. It's so, I mean, where do I begin? So it's like,
right.
Yeah. Well, I think there are like, you know, in the 90s, you know, in Western music and especially American music, you know, there was boy bands and things like, you know, like NSYNC and New Kids on the Block. That in a way is like idol culture in the sense it's like the record labels and like the marketers were like making it so it's like, okay, you're going to have a favorite like member of the band. Like, you know, they would make merchandise of like, you know, Justin Timberlake's face, and I don't remember the rest of the members of NSYNC, but you know, like they would make like merchandise of specific members to get you to like, they project this fantasy of like, oh, you could possibly get with this guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh, he could be like your boyfriend and all this. So they kind of play into that. And like the music's very surrounding, like around love and like dating, relationships, all this, or happy stuff.
It's good you're connecting it to something we're familiar with. And you're right.
Yeah.
It is very similar thing happening.
Yeah.
Except in a whole new
Yeah. So like, you know, we got a little taste of it in the 90s, but, like, not really, you know, there's still...
Oh, this is always going on.
Yeah.
Obsession with stardom and
fandom
and all this stuff.
Exactly.
Yes, this is, we know this. This is happening in
and, you know,
15th century with Shakespeare. Okay.
And there's been, like, One Direction and stuff, but, like, in Japan and South Korea, like, you know, the idol culture is a whole, like... It's a whole thing. Like, it's way bigger, I think, than, like, it ever was in, like, in terms of, like, Western artists. Like, there's, like, idol groups where it's, like, yeah, the music, it's not really about the music. It's more about the people in the group. Like, they make music, but a lot of it's very cutesy, especially with, like, the girl idols, at least. It's, like, very cutesy. They wear, like, very specific outfits. They have, like, fan chants, so it's like you, like, they have, like, at a concert, like, they give a chant and you chant back, like, it's this whole thing, and it is ultimately, like, they create this fantasy that, like, oh, well, you can end up with this girl. Or if it's a male idol group, like, oh, you can end up with this guy. And a lot of the times, like, they're not allowed to date publicly, or, like not allowed to date at all under their contract, so that there's no, like, dating scandal, and so they don't lose revenue. It's this whole thing.
I think what particularly struck me, particularly with the female idol performers, one, they're presenting a persona. It's highly curated, but very childlike.
Yes.
And kind of very sexual, but asexual.
Yeah.
And, but this is the point. Their fans are these older celibate men.
Yes.
There may be 100 or 1,000 older guys obsessing over these young women. They're not allowed to touch them.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's some kind of real hidden or repressed sexuality, but very present too. I don't know. It's just this odd situation. And these men will spend, like, hours and hours every day, or give a tremendous amount of money to have some kind of pretend contact with this performer.
Yeah.
Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, that's very much the case.
Guys who are 40s and 50s who have never dated.
Yeah.
And here they are with their imaginary girlfriend.
Exactly. Yeah. Because they give a lot of money, and that's what sells. Like, so they, like, play into that a lot. But then there's also, like this host culture where it's, like, you can go into the city and there's, like, these host clubs where there's male and female ones where you can pay to, like, be on a date with someone or, like, hang out with a group of, like, hot guys or pretty girls. Like, it's, you pay and they, like, pour your drinks and stuff
like
that.
Right, so it's like a pretend romantic situation.
It's really interesting and kind of fascinating. Like,
but it does somehow fill the people participating with some sense of satisfaction.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a left turn, but, I mean, just look at how much porno guys are into in the United States.
Yeah.
I guess, like, 1 out of 3 men are semi-obsessed
with
addicted. This imaginary experience of being with females.
Yes.
But, yeah, of course, in that situation, it's much more exploitive or deviant.
Yes, yeah, That one is definitely much more dark-sided.
Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely instances where, like, it can take a dark turn.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure that's there, too.
Yeah, but it's, like, not, like, the host clubs and stuff, they're not inherently like that. Like, it's, like, you're not
the
allowed
public
to
stuff,
do.
The above, has to, there's a lot of rules,
and
it's very strict.
Yes.
And they don't want any seedy stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least, like, publicly.
Right. Right. So, anyway, we kind of gone off into this direction. But just because it's almost unknown in the United States what is just a part of life in Japan, in the idol culture.
Yeah.
But, again, even Shibuya K, there's something very enchanting to me, but also something very pretend. Like some imaginary world I want, Misty Pete wants to go into. I've bashed my head into the radio console, and I can't.
Yeah. I would say compared to, like Shibuya K has much, like, to preface, like, not every, like, Japanese person is, like, in idol music. It's very much a specific crowd of people.
Yes, of course.
And, I mean, it's very popular, like, you know, it's, AKB48 is, like, a very popular example in Japan. 48 members. but they're all part of these subgroups. It's a whole thing. But, so it's, like, very much, you know, there is, like, not every person you're gonna meet is into it, but it's, like, there's a very dedicated crowd. And then with, like, Shibuya K, it doesn't really, I don't think it really taps into that. It taps into, like, it's very much dedicated to the aesthetic, I think. Like, the kitschiness, like, a lot of, like, 60s, at least initially, like, 60s kitschy, like, you know, little moped scooters and, like, mod fashion. That's initially, like, where it was a little bit, like, especially the band Pizzicato 5 really, like, delved into that.
They had a moment here, too.
Yeah, well, I think one of their songs was in Futurama. Their song Baby Love Child, it was either in, I think it was in an episode or a movie. Mm. It was in one something. That's a very good song, but yeah, I feel like it's dedicated to the aesthetic, but not in the same way of, like, it's not in, like, a marketing, a lot of it is more DIY and, like, indie than, say, like, oh, we need to, like, pander to these people. It's more so, like, oh, we want to, like, really hone in on this aesthetic and see what we can do with it.
Yeah, I don't feel like Shibuya K is, like, a manipulation. No. I don't feel like it's a put-on. It's just this kind of naturally emerging genre, but it's not there to, like, take advantage of people at all. Mm-mm. But maybe the idol culture definitely is.
Yeah, the idol culture definitely, like, panders for sure.
People are being kind of exploited, but from what I can see. And now here's two white people talking about this other country's culture. But, you know, and there's similarities to what we do here in the United States. There's resonance. There's different forms of it, perhaps, you know, uglier or just, you know, different kinds of worshiping our royalty.
Well, I would say it was definitely, like, with Britney Spears, like, I would argue that she was kind of an idol, like, considered an idol.
Or Madonna,
Where, you know, she's painted as this, like, good girl who doesn't do anything, like, this family-friendly, like, woman, and so... And then she has one moment where she's mentally unwell, like, due to the circumstances around her and, like, this pressure that people put on her. And suddenly she's demonized and, like, people, like, turn on her in an instant. So I think that's very much, the idol culture that can be found, like, anywhere.
You're right. And it's good. It's really good. We're identifying. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're all doing this. We all like to put people on pedestals.
Yeah.
But we like even better to smash our idols and be iconoclasts and drag them off and then kill them.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting deep here. Yeah, but this is what we do. This is a schadenfreude of seeing people who are famous and we love them, and now they're in ruins.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the tabloid culture is about that, showing how celebrities are now, yelling at telephone poles or something like that.
Yeah, it's just like a very human thing where it's like when you put too much pressure on a person, like, that they're gonna, like, you know, it's only a matter of time where they're gonna, like, the pressure is going to be too much.
Well, how could you even grow up in that fishbowl and be anything near sane?
Yeah.
I mean, even as a young kid or even as a teenager, it's so distorting.
Yeah.
And almost no one around you likes you. I mean, they want something from you. They want your money or they want to be close to stardom. But you basically don't have any friends.
Mm-mm.
Or maybe you can with other super famous people. Mm-hmm. Who don't want anything from you, but they're all messed up people. So those are your friends?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, who can you really trust? Like, when you are that popular, like, it's who can you really trust? Because, you know, it feels like everyone wants something from you. It's actually interesting to go back a little bit to the idol, like, culture, the idol music. There's actually a Japanese film, animated film, by the director Satoshi Kon, and it's called Perfect Blue, and it follows...
I saw that,
and it was the inspiration for the movie Black Swan with Natalie Portman, but yeah, basically the premise of it is, like, this girl who's part of an Japanese idol group, she suddenly wants to be... Like, she wants to go into a different direction creatively and wants to become an actress. And so she leaves the idol group and she has a stalker. So one of her, like, quote-unquote fans who, like, really loves her, like, is stalking her heavily and is upset that she has left the idol group and has become an actress. And, like... follows her, leaves these, like, very suspicious notes, and then she starts hallucinating and doesn't, like... Then the viewer, you don't know, like, what's in her head or what's actually happening. The line kind of blurs, and it kind of...
Right. I was a little confused by that movie.
Yeah,
right.
It definitely takes a couple watches, but it just kind of shows, like, how, like, even... I mean, how crazy some people can be and how they put people on pedestals, but then also, like, how much of a toll it takes on the former idol and how she doesn't even know who she is anymore and, like, doesn't know what's real because it's, like, she starts questioning, like, oh, and you know, am I meant to be an actress? Like, what's going on? Like, did I make the wrong choice? And it's just very fascinating, so... If you haven't seen Perfect Blue, I highly recommend that movie.
Yeah, Perfect Blue. Well, this leads to another conversation mm-hmm. about how this maybe hyper-curated culture mm-hmm. that's very controlled mm-hmm. in a lot of ways comes up with incredibly yeah. creative
yeah.
art. I mean, yeah. Just in the anime realm, you have Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
Just anybody who's seen yeah. some, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's different. It's so different from anything we know of as mm-hmm. animation
yeah.
and inspirational.
Yeah.
I mean, just their art, their music, their films. So maybe when you're in a little confined space,
mm-hmm.
you can emerge with brilliance mm-hmm. that's unexpected.
Yeah.
Like our spirit is going to travel
yeah.
and find novelty regardless of our exterior conditions.
Yeah. I mean, I think when humans are put under certain circumstances, like their creativity, like, or just reflection, critical thinking is really like put into overdrive. Like, an example being, I'm not comparing Japanese society to, like, communist, like, the Soviet Union. When I say this, I'm just, it reminds me of, like...
Hyper-controlled.
Yeah, yeah.
Totalitarian
yeah, it,
country.
It's making me think of, like, the animation and the film that came out of the Soviet Union, like, peak,
Stalin.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was just so unique and interesting and, like, very much subliminal reflection, like, as much as they could subliminally, like, talk about their, like, experiences.
Right. Some brilliance, but yeah. dropped in very...
Yeah.
In a very nuanced fashion.
Yeah.
So it can kind of get under the censors. But amazing yeah. work. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of art came out of that. That was radical, but you wouldn't know it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like... When we are put into these situations that, like, we feel like we can't express ourselves fully, like, it really makes us, like, rethink how to, like, convey a message.
Mm.
So.
Well, it's a good segue. We
yeah.
kind of expanded this. This
yeah.
is typically what I do in interviews. Suddenly yeah. we're talking about primary motivations of
yeah.
humanity and these deep philosophical
yeah.
issues.
Yeah.
They all relate back to Shibuya K.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, just to wind up here, Alexa as an artist.
Yeah.
So you got into KXLU and radio
yeah.
just somehow
yeah.
through happenstance. But
yeah.
you're a creator. Talk about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So I would say primarily an illustrator. Like, when I went to LMU, I studied animation, and I do really love animation, and I initially thought that's what I wanted to do, but, you know, as I kind of learned and, I don't know, as I, like, went throughout school and kind of gained different creative mediums and, like, met different people, I, like, realized, oh, you know what, as much as I love animation, it's, like... I don't know if I see myself doing that per se. Like, when I was at LMU, I took a printmaking class and I fell in love with just the art of printmaking. And then with that illustrating, and I realized, you know what, my work is more illustrative than, like, I could see some of my stuff, like, animated well and, like, I can do that on my own, but it's like...
You're finding yourself as an artist.
Yeah, exactly. I've pivoted more towards printmaking and illustrating. So I've designed stickers. I like print my stuff on, you know, I screen print on paper. And like, as I said before, I've now been screen printing on clothes and upcycling a little bit. And I think I'm going more towards the fashion realm and, or just like stickers, small things, fashion. And like, that's where I see myself. Or that's where I think my art is expressed the best.
So people can find you easily at Feral FM
yeah.
on Instagram, Alexa KT Alexa Terry. Well, what's your Etsy store?
Yeah, so my Etsy store is called Feral Moments, and so
Feral
is my
Moments, right.
My art Instagram. So I post most of my art on Feral Moments, and then Feral FM is where I post my set list for my radio show, and anything radio show related goes over there. And then, yeah, Alexa KT is my personal, but, you know, it's free for the public, so...
Well, Alexa yeah. Terry, yes, yeah. We'll have to just make this a regular feature on my talk show here, yeah. Mystic Beat Chronicles, because yeah. I love discussing
yeah.
these cultural
yeah.
creations,
yeah.
but then also stepping back and seeing their metaphorical or archetypical
mm-hmm.
meaning.
Exactly.
I think that's what we've done a little yeah. today. And now yeah. you're going to curate a set list for us of Shibuya
Cat. Yeah, yeah. And I hope you enjoy it. And I hope whether you just got introduced to Shibuya Cat or you've been listening to it for a while, I hope you enjoy and discover some new music. And also thank you, Mystic Pete, for having me on your show.
Thanks.
Thank you. なれたいから I hope you 多分少し寄り道もするけど I feel back いつも君のこと思うよ I wish you ずっとそばにいるからねどこから始めるのどこを取ればいいの何をすればいいの何思えばいいのそれは不思議なこととても不思議なことあなたが始めたとても不思議なことどうしてもわからないことだらけ逆さにしても変わらないかどうしても叶わないルールなら変えればいい I wish you 願うすべてを叶えたいから I hope you 多分少し寄り道もするけど I feel back いつも君のこと思うよ I wish you ずっとそばにいるからねするけど I feel back いつも君のこと思うよ I wish you ずっとそばにいるからね I wish you 願うすべてを叶えたいから I hope you 多分少し寄り道もするけど I feel back いつも君のこと思うよ I wish you ずっとそばにいるからね
きの中穏やかな日々を夢で Hey there, you're listening to Mystic Pete Chronicles here on KXLU. My name is Alexa, or also Feral FM, and I'm a guest for today. And for the past 20 minutes, you heard Japanese Shibuya K, a genre that I love very much and that I've been talking about on the show today. And yeah, some of the songs you heard were Young Alive in Love by Flipper's Guitar, Chibomato with the song King of Silence, Sarani Poji with the song Dear Heroes, Capsule with the song I Wish You, and then Dinky Groove with the song Shangri-La. I hope you've enjoyed the little mini set, and hopefully you discover more Shibuya K. And yeah.
Coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles, you can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interviewed my wonderful colleague at KXLU, Alexa Terry, about Shibuya K. Alexa's show, Feral FM, can be heard every Monday on KXLU at 10:30 a.m. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out!